this morning I'm preaching, even though Jordan is here. It's a privilege. But this morning, let me kind of step back a little bit. 2 weeks ago, I was sitting here. Actually, I was doing sound, and Jordan had asked me to preach this morning, and I had struggled with what to preach with. Usually, I like being given a direction or an idea of what, you know, maybe Jordan's in a series or whatever. He didn't give that. He's like, it's after Thanksgiving, give a, you know, maybe do something about that, but it's up to you. And two weeks ago during church, I was standing there doing sound, and it just struck me. Thanksgiving isn't always, the holidays in general aren't always the best season for some people. For some of us, it's a time for coming together, seeing family, and just generally being part of the one of the biggest things that we should be thankful for, family. But for many, during this time of year, it's hard to give thanks. For a multitude of reasons, whether it be lost loved ones, sickness, financial ruin, or any of, I mean, there's just infinite possibilities for why it's hard. I mean, we live in this crazy life, and it's not easy. For those who have experienced these things, they exhaust all hope that things are going to get better. We sit and we see the darkness all around us, and it's hard. Now, maybe this isn't you, and you're not one of those who have a deeply personal suffering during the holidays. Maybe your suffering and loss of hope comes from the intense suffering that we see around the entire world. I mean, all it takes is a few seconds on the news to see that things suck for a lot of people. And having that empathy, it hurts. Regardless of the source, I know for me, and maybe for you, it makes you want to cry out, God, please fix this. It really doesn't help either when either we're listening to someone or we have that one perky friend who comes around and says, throws out verses like Psalm 118:1. Give thanks to the Lord, for he is good. His faithful love endures forever. When you're hurting, that just doesn't help. And maybe you're sitting there and saying, well, that's how I feel. Don't worry. If you're not feeling this pain, the suffering, maybe you have in the past and you've come through it, but maybe you haven't at all and you've been extremely lucky. We'll get to you towards the end of this. But no matter what's going on, God is always good. And there, well, but for anyone who reads this message, this verse, we know what it implies. That no matter what, God is good, always. And therefore, we should always give thanks to God. At the very least, for his goodness. But that's hard. In the midst of everything that life throws at us, in the midst of the pain and the suffering, sometimes we begin to question, is God really good? If we look at Isaiah 45:7, we see God described very differently. I create the light and make the darkness. I send the good times and the bad times. I, the Lord, am the one who does these things. What? I thought God was good. He sends the bad times and the darkness? Although, I have to admit, this description feels a lot more like how I feel a lot of the times. And if I have to be honest, giving thanks to that God is a lot harder. So how do we deal with this? How do we deal with a God who I know from everything that I've been taught in church, everything that I've heard from everyone that I know that has some interaction with God, that God is good, but looks drastically different in my everyday life? That looks drastically different in this broken and hurting world that we see every day on the news. Many of the answers to these hard questions that we ask are found in the book of Job. I know that some of you may be thinking, yeah, talking about Job and all this darkness and a message about being thankful during a time where I'm suffering the most doesn't sound quite right. It feels like, well, maybe we should be talking about how good things can be. Sugar plums, and this feels all bah humbug and whatever. But stick with me, because it's about to get a little interesting. The book of Job provides this insight into the God that Isaiah and the God that Psalms describes. This God of light and dark. Let's start off by kind of understanding who this person Job is. In Job 1, 1 through 5, it says, "There once was a man named Job who lived in the land of Uz. He was blameless, a man of complete integrity. He feared God and stayed away from evil. He had 7 sons and 3 daughters. He owned 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 teams of oxen, and 500 female donkeys. He also had many servants. He was, in fact, the richest person in the entire area. Job's sons would take turns preparing feasts in their homes, and they would also invite their 3 sisters to celebrate with them. When these celebrations ended, sometimes after several days, Job would purify his children. He would get up early in the morning and offer a burnt offering for each of them. For Job said to himself, 'Perhaps my children have sinned and have cursed God in their hearts.' This was Job's regular practice." For all intents and purposes, Job is the best guy around. If we were to see him today, he's the perfect Christian guy. He's got all the money. Everything seems to be going right for Job. And he even, like, ritually, like, prays for his family and cleanses them just in case they might have done something wrong. Even God, a couple of verses later, calls Job the finest man in all the earth. And he says this almost braggingly, like, Job, he's the best dude on the planet right now. And he's got everything. But then we see the scene shift. In walks this guy called the Satan. Which, on a side note, is not the devil. But in Hebrew, the Satan is a descriptor for someone that opposes you or is an adversary of someone else. In this case, the angel is the Satan, and they're opposed to Job. You see, right after telling us about how great Job is, This angel comes about. And we see this back and forth between the Satan and God, which ends up with the Satan pointing out, hey, listen, God, you've given everything to this guy. He's got it going on. He's rich. He's got a great family. And of course he, like, gives you everything he can. You've given everything you can to him. So God says to him, that's not true. Go ahead, take everything from him. Yeah, he's the best, but he doesn't love me because of the stuff he's been given. And by the way, this was God's idea. The angel, the Satan, didn't press for this response. God said, go ahead, take it. If you think that's the way it is, go ahead, take it all. And as we read on, we see Job suffering in unimaginable ways. His entire family, except for his wife, are all taken and killed. All of his wealth is taken from him. He loses everything, including his health. His wife, clearly grieved by everything that has happened to her, her family, and her husband, tells her husband just to curse God and die, while he's sitting there scraping the sores with broken pottery. His friends even show up to help console him, and they sit on the ground with him for a week in silence, because as it says in Job 2:13, they saw his suffering was too great for words. I mean, your suffering has to be pretty bad for me to show up and just sit there and not say anything for an entire week. Now, maybe you can relate with Job. Maybe you think, well, I haven't gone through anything that serious, but I do feel like this way. And sometimes it feels completely unbearable, this pain and suffering. And if you haven't experienced it personally, you can see it happening all around the world. When we see and experience all this suffering, and we see how God doesn't seem to stop any of it, we can often ask this famous philosophical question. If God is all good and all powerful and all knowing, how can he allow these things to happen to me and everyone else? This is how Job puts it in Job 19:7 through 12. I cry out, help, but no one answers me. I protest, but there is no justice. God has blocked my way so I cannot move. He has plunged my path into darkness. He has stripped me of my honor and removed the crown from my head. He has demolished me on every side and I am finished. He has uprooted my hope like a fallen tree. His fury burns against me. His troops advance. He counts me as an enemy. They build up roads to attack me. They camp all around my tent. This is the tension that we live in. This tension that is at the heart of Job. You see, Job is frustrated with God, as we can be. While writing this sermon, it happened to me, and it's happened to me, I mean, throughout my entire life. But last week, Sarah's car started making an awful noise. Right as we had just paid for my car to fix for a fix that cost over $1,000. Then, the Thursday before, her car broke down. So that's more expenses to fix. And I fixed it. I took all day Friday to fix it. And something else broke. So I'm like, okay, I'll go back and fix it. The next day I show up, it's gone. It'd been towed. And this all days before Thanksgiving. And even when we were there, we eventually got the car fixed and paid for the towing fee and the ticket and everything. And we get to Sarah's family's and my family's house, And on our way back, actually, on Friday night or Thursday night from my family's, the alternator light comes on. We blew the belt. That awful noise stopped. And we all know what happens when an awful noise just suddenly stops. Something went wrong. Of all things, the air conditioning unit went and completely blew off, like the wheel blew off of it. And that's another $500 that we had to fix. And it makes me ask, why? You know, this is days before and after Thanksgiving. Why? Why does it seem like everything is against us right now, God? Why does it seem like just when we start to get ahead, we get cut back down? Does anyone else think these things? We say these things. And Job says a whole lot more than that. But there's one thing that Job doesn't do that I have a hard time with. He doesn't become bitter. He's hurt. He's angry. And you see, through everything, Job continues to engage God. Now, don't get me wrong. He's mad at God. But he doesn't allow everything that has happened around him to keep himself from God. We often yell at God, and then that's the end of the conversation. We often don't stick around for an answer. Heck, we don't even stick around to tell God how we really feel. We yell and leave, angry at the situation, God, and anything and anyone that gets in our way. And never get to the point where we can ask the question, why? And even if we do get to the point where we can ask that question, where we actually ask God, why? Why is this happening to me? It doesn't seem like there's an answer. At least not one that's given to us. But that's not the point. You see, Job, in all of his frustrations and all of his anger and everything that happens to him, he's not even given an answer. At least not to the question why. Here's part of God's answer to Job. Then the Lord answered Job from a whirlwind. That's right, God showed up in a tornado. Something that just a few verses earlier had destroyed his entire family. Or actually, at the beginning of the book, so several chapters before. Who is this that questions my wisdom with such ignorant words? Brace yourself like a man, because I have some questions for you, and you must answer them. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me, if you know so much, who determined its dimensions and stretched out the surveying line? What supports its foundations? Who laid its cornerstone as the morning stars sang together and the angels shouted for joy? When this happens to Job, he's left speechless and humbled after this encounter. I'm pretty sure you or I would be left pretty speechless if that happened to us. But the thing to realize here is that Job is taken outside of his understanding of the world and is given just a tiny taste of God's unfathomable power, glory, and meticulous design. Job, through his persistence in engaging God and wrestling with this question, why? For 28 chapters, he was able to take this entire experience and tell God how he felt. With God's reply and show of power, Job now knows that God's goodness is at a level that is impossible to understand. We cannot understand the plans of the Creator. We just don't have the capacity. And that's not an easy pill to swallow. I know it isn't for me. I'm someone who always wants to know what's going on, what the picture, big picture is, and even the little details. But I can't. It's impossible. But this is what we learn. If we can are able to continue to press into God through the darkness, at the end, we'll have a greater capacity to understand God's goodness to a depth that we were not able, we weren't even capable of before. Now, right now, in the midst of suffering, that doesn't seem like enough. Right now, that seems like probably the worst answer that anyone could give you. It's almost worse than that person who walks up and says, "Well, I know you're suffering, but God is good." But I promise you that even if it doesn't get easier, even if it gets harder, if we honestly bring our pain and grief to God and trust that He cares, realizing that He knows exactly what He's doing, we'll get through it. And at the end, we'll have a faith that will be much greater. Now, those that I spoke about at the beginning who haven't really understood this pain, this suffering, who Psalms 118 really resonates with you, and it's like, God is good, and I'm going to give thanks to God. Your job is simple, but will be harder than you might think. Don't be that person that says, "Well, I know you're suffering, but God is good." Or tell them that, "Well, God is just testing you for this time." And certainly don't be like the friends of Job who showed up, they sat with him for those 7 days, and then tried to figure out what Job had done wrong. Your job is when you see someone in their suffering to come alongside them and say, "I'm sorry you're hurting." And then be there for them in their suffering. That's really the only right thing that Job's friends did for him. They grieved with him in silence because sometimes we just don't have the words or the ability to understand someone else's suffering. But the biggest thing that you can do to help those that are suffering around you is to help make sure that they are continuing to go to God with this pain, continuing to seek out God. At the end of the book of Job, God says that Job has spoken rightly of him. But if you read it, you know that Job certainly didn't say everything right. Like, theologically, even just on a, like, well, any level, a lot of things that he said were just straight up wrong. But what Job did get right was that he wrestled with this frustration and anger. He approached God honestly, with all his emotion, only wanting to just talk with God. So this holiday season, it may be hard to give thanks when so much seems wrong. Because I know it has been for me. But we have to seek and trust in God's wisdom when we encounter the suffering. with all the emotion and struggle of true, honest, raw prayer. And as the worship team comes up, I'll finish with this. It's not a painless path to walk, but the ability to see God in a greater light, to touch the divine in difficult times, holds the potential for reward that deeply feed the soul and lead to a renewed hope and faith. So I urge you, if this is you, if you feel this pain at any level, go to God and continue to give him your pain and suffering.